Hey, it's Callie, and you're listening to the 47th episode of the Hippie Haven podcast. If you're new here, I release an episode every Wednesday related to living an ethical and eco-friendly lifestyle. I want to meet you where you're at, so we cover all sorts of topics, like how to make less trash, urban composting, beekeeping, secondhand shopping, starting an eco-business, and much more. My goal is to inspire you to take action, both in your day-to-day routine and on a larger scale of community activism, because I believe that together we will make a difference. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe so you automatically get each new episode right when it comes out. Today's guest is Matt, also known on Instagram as an urban harvester, back again this week for a conversation on palm oil and how bad it really is. As always, you can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on my website, hippiehavenpodcast.com/047. If you've listened to some of the most recent episodes, you'll already know that I'm doing a ton of events and workshops throughout California this summer. The next two coming up are August 15th. I'll be participating in a discussion on how to make a difference in your community at the Refill Shop in Ventura, California. And August 17th, I'll be doing a DIY bath salt workshop at Bring Your Own in Long Beach, California. These events and all other upcoming events are listed on the Bestowed Essentials event page on Facebook, so go there for full details. And if you're in the LA, Southern California area, I hope to see you at an upcoming event. Now for today's episode.
All right, Matt, tell me a little bit about your background first.
Yeah, so my name's Matt. I grew up in London, and I kind of fell in love with the natural world through television. So I went on to university to study zoology at Edinburgh. And then I moved to Northern Europe to do a master's in climate change. And through that time, I just kind of gained a better understanding of the ecological situation we're in today. And that's what kick-started my Instagram project called An Urban Harvester, where I, through food waste, explore various issues with our modern global food system.
And recently on your Instagram, you've been talking about palm oil and food giants. And so I really want to get into that. What is palm oil? Where does it come from? And why has it become so popular across the globe?
Exactly. Yeah, palm oil is a fascinating crop. It's actually one of the most common crops across the globe today because it's extremely successful. It's one of the most high-yielding crops in the world, and it's found in up to 50% of all consumer products, or the most common consumer products across the globe. So palm oil, in a short space of time, has become a central part of our lives. And the two countries where it's most commonly produced are Malaysia and Indonesia, two countries located in Southeast Asia, who produce over 85% of all palm oil on Earth. The interesting thing with palm oil is that it's actually come from Western Africa originally. That's the region where it was domesticated. And it was imported into the country of Malaysia in 1875. But it's only since the 1960s that palm oil slowly but surely and an ever quicker rate has just absolutely ballooned into what it is today.
So my understanding is that there's two types of palm oil, correct? There's like palm oil and then there's palm kernel oil. What's the difference between those two?
That's exactly right. So you've got the oil palm tree, and from that tree, you can extract palm oil, which is from the fruit, or palm kernel oil, which is from the seed. And so those are the two different oils from the same plant. And the thing with palm oil is that it's kind of been dubbed a miracle ingredient, because it's so versatile. It can be, and this is quite a technical term, but fractionated, which means split into very many different oils of different consistencies, which is why big agriculture and kind of big food, the big food producers, like it so much, because it has so many different uses. That's why you can find palm oil in biscuits, cookies, shampoo, soap, crisps or chips, as you like to call them in the US, ice cream, lipstick, shampoo, detergents, frying oils, baked goods, and all sorts of other processed foods. And that's why it's so popular. And what's important to, after doing this research about palm oil, is that it's important to understand that palm oil is here to stay. It's not leaving, because it's just too high yielding a crop, and it's become absolutely vital for our lives. So I've got a couple of statistics here when it comes to, so the thing is, palm oil is a vegetable oil. And so out of all the vegetable oils produced on this planet, to make 1 ton, which is about 2,200 pounds in imperial units, palm oil uses up to 8 times less land than soybean oil, for example. So it's extremely efficient at producing crops. And what we're going to have to do over the next decades is find systems to produce palm oil which is ecologically sustainable and socially fair. So basically talking about labor rights. And that's what I've really learned over these few weeks, is that palm oil is here to stay, and that's why it's so critical that we make sure its production is fair for the greatest number of people as possible.
So palm oil is really common, really versatile, really efficient. But when we're hearing about it, we're often hearing about it in these negative terms. And you just started to touch on that. How is palm oil hurting people, animals, and the environment around the world?
So palm oil has grown massively in Malaysia and Indonesia. These are two pretty big countries in Southeast Asia. And since the 1960s, production in those countries has absolutely exploded. And the reason why palm oil is actually quite a controversial topic is that for the Indonesian, Malaysian, and Singaporean governments, this crop is absolutely critical to how well their national economies perform. And unsurprisingly, or not surprisingly, in those countries, we've had huge, huge deforestation. The thing with Borneo is that it's the world's third largest island. It's massive. But between the years of 1985 and 2005, the island as a whole has lost, on average, 2.1 million acres of forest every single year. We're talking, in 3 decades, over 45% of the island's forests being chopped down, both for timber and for palm oil plantations. So, I mean, this is, from a perspective of climate change and biodiversity, absolutely catastrophic. When it comes to Borneo, you've got some of the most biodiverse forests on the planet, as well as some of the oldest, completely just disappearing off the face of the planet. You've got some of the world's most famous and most loved animals, like rhinos, pygmy elephants, clouded leopards, leopard cats, tarsia, which is the only carnivorous primates on the planet, who are all becoming greatly endangered. And of course, I've forgotten the most famous of all, the orangutan, which is one of our closest cousins on this planet. We share 97% of genes with this species. And in the last 16 years alone, we've lost 150,000 orangutans on the island of Borneo. This is why citizens across the West have become so concerned about palm oil that's being imported from Malaysia and Indonesia, because we're losing so much wildlife. And also, of course, some of these forests have huge amounts of carbon, releasing tremendous amounts of carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere, and thereby accelerating climate change. Amnesty International released this report in 2017 about the Singaporean company called Wilmar, which is the world's largest processor and merchandiser of palm oil, and it controls over 43% of global palm oil trade. Now, Amnesty International undercover reporters went into five different subsidiaries on the island of Sumatra, four of which, by the way, were certified RSPO. And they found on those plantations forced labour, child labour, where some children as young as the age of 8 up to 15 were helping their parents to meet the company's picking targets. You also had gender discrimination issues, where men had permanent contracts and the vast majority of women were just given casual work arrangements, which meant that obviously they had a lot less job security. You've also got exploitative working practices where workers who end up working overtime are very rarely paid for all those extra hours worked. And last but not least, and this is quite a personal issue, is that these plantations still use a herbicide called paraquat, which is a highly toxic chemical, so much so it's been banned across the European Union. And the issue is that paraquat needs, once you use paraquat, you need good training and you need equipment. And all five of these subsidiary companies failed to provide that to their workers. And the thing with paraquat is that it's been linked to Parkinson's disease. And the thing is, my granddad died from this disease, and it's a devastating disease. I mean, basically, you become like a vegetable when it becomes very far down the line. And so for the fact that these workers are using this chemical so freely in an untrained manner, is really just not good, to put it mildly.
What was the 2015 Southeast Asia haze?
So the Southeast Asian haze in 2015 is an event which took place from June 28th to October 29th. And it's somewhat famous in certain countries because you had all those famous photographs where the sky was orange for months on end. And it turns out the scientists have calculated that 6.4 million acres of Indonesian forests and peatlands, which is kind of a tropical wetland ecosystem, went up in smoke, mostly due to calculated and orchestrated land clearances, both for paper and palm oil monocultures. So that's what happened. And Harvard and Columbia University researchers have estimated that approximately 100,000 people might have died prematurely as a consequence of that event. So it's quite a remarkable event, really. And one of the places which was most impacted, quite ironically, it turns out, is the small island of Singapore. And the reason why this is ironic is that you've got a major palm oil trader called Olam. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But Olam is a major palm oil trader that is mostly owned by Temasek, which is an investment fund, and a pretty big one, at $225 billion owned by the Singapore government. And between 2011 and 2015, Olam's palm oil trade grew 20 times. So it's pretty ironic when you think about it that Singapore is financing and profiting from major palm oil trading, which in turn is kind of in this vicious cycle with Indonesian deforestation. And that deforestation is then polluting its own citizens. So, yeah, when I dug into that story a little bit, I did have a chuckle, especially when you read Temasek's mission statement, which is do well, do right, and do good. Anyway, I'll let your listeners reflect about that statement.
No, that's really powerful. So I want to recap that. So the government of Singapore is responsible for polluting their own citizens, essentially. Is that correct?
Well, partially, certainly. The thing which is complex when you analyze Indonesian and Malaysian palm oil is that you've got big players like Olam and another company called Vilmar, but then you've also got all these subsidiary companies and third-party suppliers. So it's very difficult to get a gauge of who is to blame. And of course, it's not just a single actor. You've got many, many different parties. But it has been documented by an NGO in America called Mighty Earth that Olam is definitely a major palm oil global trader that has major operations in Indonesia. And so therefore, definitely is partly responsible for the region's major pollution in this Southeast Asian haze event of 2015.
There's always so much going on behind the scenes that we often don't know about. So thank you for this research that you've been doing. It's really interesting stuff. Now, as you mentioned, palm oil is in up to 50% of common consumer products, so it's hard to avoid it outright. What are the different names that are used to hide palm oil in ingredient lists, and how can we find them? How can we know if the products that we're buying have palm oil in them?
That's a very good question. My recommendation for people concerned about palm oil is to try and go zero waste as possible. And by that, I mean try and buy whole products. The minute you buy processed products, it becomes very difficult because legislation differs between countries as to what actually needs to go on ingredient lists. So for example, Palm Oil Investigations, which apparently dubs itself as the Palm Oil Watchdog, has listed more than 200 common ingredients in food, home, and personal care products containing palm oil. So they know that the palm oil is in there, but only 10% of those products include the word palm oil. So major food manufacturers, because they know that palm oil has become quite, you know, a controversial crop, they find all these different chemical names, which are quite complex, where the modern consumer just might not know that stands for palm oil. They use those names to basically hide the fact that palm oil is present in those products. So it's a very difficult and murky situation we find ourselves in.
Now, what do you think? Do you think that we should just try to avoid using palm oil altogether? Or do you think that could actually be more destructive in the long run?
It's a difficult question. Ideally, more of us would become food producers. I mean, one of the big problems in the West is that today you've got about only 2% of our population producing food for the rest of the population. So if you want to avoid palm oil, the surest thing you can do is grow all your own food, because 2/3 of all palm oil goes into food products. Now, of course, we're not going to all become self-sufficient food producers overnight. So my recommendation is to not support the biggest brands. At the end of the day, the biggest brands mostly want products that are as cheaply produced as possible, so that consumers buy as many of that product as possible, and that the margins for profit are pretty big too, so that shareholders at the end of the day can receive big dividends on their quarterly statements. So I don't recommend, for example, buying Nestle products or Kellogg's for that matter. They're just two major big food mega corporations that buy Southeast Asian palm oil. The thing is, though, is that you do, as I've said before, palm oil is actually in itself quite, well, a very efficient crop, and therefore some people might think that that's sustainable. The thing with sustainability is that what is sustainability? Who writes the definition? Because that's going to vary tremendously. But I have found a palm oil producer that is sustainable. It's 100% organic. It's deforestation free. It leaves room on its farms for wildlife, and they pay small-scale farmers a fair price. The company is called Natural Habitats, and they're based out of Colorado. They don't produce palm oil in Southeast Asia. They produce palm oil in Ecuador, in South America, as well as Sierra Leone in West Africa. And they've got retailers in the USA. So, for example, New Seasons Market in California, Oregon, and Washington. You've got Natural Grocers, which operate nationwide across the USA. You've got National Co-op Grocers that also operate nationwide. And the last, but there's many more, you've got Lemon Street Market operating out of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So the thing is that you've got a lot of retailers who do want sustainable palm. So if you do want sustainable palm products that contain sustainable palm, there are solutions out there. But unfortunately, you do have to do your homework a little bit. Their Instagram, Palm Done Right, is extremely informative because you've got stories about the farmers themselves, all sorts of facts about palm oil. And so you can actually learn a lot about this sustainable, this crop that has the potential to be sustainable, and it needs to become sustainable in the coming decades.
Now, as soon as we start talking about sustainable palm oil, one prominent organization comes to mind, and that's the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, also known as RSPO. And they've really positioned themselves as like the global authority on sustainable palm oil. But that might not necessarily be accurate. What are your thoughts on RSPO, and what have you uncovered on them?
So the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, which is also known as the RSPO, was founded in 2004 by the WWF, the nature organization, that convinced a small number of palm growers, manufacturers, and retailers to come together to try and find solutions as to how we can make produce sustainable palm oil. Now, so today, you've got about 19% of palm oil that's deemed sustainable. And the reason why I kind of say sustainable in that manner will be unveiled imminently. Now, the thing is that they have done good work. And that it's important to try and congratulate and identify initiatives that do want to do good. But with anything, these things can be abused. So Amnesty International, a few years ago, released a report about labor rights on the island of Sumatra in Indonesia. And it had some pretty devastating things. But when it came to the RSPO, they suggested that the RSPO is acting as a shield which deflects greater scrutiny on Wilmar's and other companies' practices, and that the implementation and monitoring of the RSPCO criteria are extremely weak and based on a superficial assessment system. Now, I mean, that's a pretty big statement, and it's important to make clear that Wilmar is the biggest global trader of palm oil, controlling 43% of all palm oil trading activity on the planet. Now, for Amnesty International to then make statements about this organization is pretty devastating. One of the major issues I see it is that, and this is difficult because this could become quite a philosophical debate, but the RSPCO's view is that they don't want the certification to be too strict because they want to encourage participation from companies. they hope that once companies sign up to the certification, and it is important to make clear that, you know, after paying a pretty healthy and substantial membership fee, they hope that once these companies are involved and they can see that their palm oil, which is certified, is sold for a higher price, that they might boost sustainable production. Now, the big problem for me here is that makes it very difficult for the consumer who wants to do good by going out he or she's way to buy that product because they believe that it's sustainable, when in fact that might not be the case. A product can receive a certified sustainable label even if 99% of that palm oil which is included in the product is from freshly deforested land. And it's worse than that. There's no transparency. Well, there is some transparency, but not enough, because the vast majority of palm oil in Southeast Asia is traced only as far as the mill where the palm oil is processed, where the oil palm is processed to become palm oil. It's not from the field. And that's where it kind of becomes this black hole where you just don't have enough transparency. And I know there are probably some technology solutions like the blockchain in the future that could make things a little more transparent. But today, for me, when I read all these things, the alarm bells are ringing.
And that's a wrap. I'll be back next week with La Vie of Thrift Therapy Podcast to talk about both the art and the science of thrifting.
If you find value in the Hippie Haven podcast, please share it with someone you know who'd be interested. You can leave a review on iTunes or whichever podcast app you're using, and also consider buying me a virtual cup of coffee to keep me going. Each podcast episode takes around 6 hours to create, and episodes cost about $50 each out of my own pocket. These costs include file hosting, editing, transcription for people who need or prefer visual content, and my own time of researching, drafting, recording, proofing, and promoting. Visit buymeacoffee.com/Callie, that's C-A-L-L-E-E, to support the work I'm doing with a $4 cup of coffee. Thank you all from the bottom of my heart for spending this time with me, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.